Well, thanks, Stu. What happens when you're old school is you come up with papers. Remember this? This is called paper. Well, good morning. Thank you for being here this morning to hear the wonder of God's word. And I'm especially thankful that all of you remembered to come an hour earlier. Good job. Well done. All right, so as Stu mentioned, Pastor Jeff had knee surgery this past week, and that's why I'm here. We are going to be looking at Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. Now, there are a bunch of questions that I'm hoping we can answer as we go through this chapter. Here are some of those questions. What is faith? Why is it important? What does it look like? What benefit does it bring? What's the price? What does it cost to have faith? And who can have faith? Do you have to be a Jew? Do you have to be a man? Do you have to be a priest? Who can have faith? So we're going to try and answer all of those questions as we go through Hebrews chapter 11. Now, if you would open your Bibles or you can follow along on the slides, we have 40 verses to cover this morning, so we're going to go through really quick. Faith is the confidence that what we hope will actually happen. It gives us assurance about things we cannot see. That's God's definition of faith. It is that deep confidence that God will keep his promises. Even though we cannot see God now, we're confident that he exists, that he's in control, and that he will keep his promises. Through their faith, the people in days of old earned a good reputation. Faith is not something new. It's not something modern. It's not something we just invented. Faith has been around since the time of Adam and Eve and continues to this day. Now, this one will give you goosebumps. By faith, we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, that what we now see did not come from anything that can be seen. Do you know how many stars there are? Anybody tell me how many stars there are?
73.
The answer is no human being knows. We don't know. One of the estimates that I saw said that there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to the 24th power, 1 sextillion stars. And that's just a wild guess. Nobody knows except God. Because God spoke and each of those stars came into being. Now, were you there when God made the world? Tell you what, I'm old, but I'm not that old. I was not there when God came, or when God brought the world into being. So how do we know how creation happened? Well, we know from an eyewitness. God himself tells us how creation happened. I can't speak anything into existence, but God did. God spoke and stars formed. God spoke and galaxies started spinning. God spoke and our beautiful earth sprang into being. God spoke and there were giraffes and zebras and sharks and nudibranchs. God spoke and the wonder of the human body became real. God spoke and formed everything that we can see and touch and feel and measure. Now, think about the implications of what this means. First, God clearly is not human. I can't decide how the universe was going to be formed, but God did. I can't speak anything into being, not even a bad joke, but God did. Secondly, God made all of this, so God makes the rules. That's the way it works. If you make it, you make the rules. God makes the rules. I cannot decide what the rules are. God does. Third, God sets the standards of what is right and what is wrong. God gets to decide because he's the one who made all of this. Fourth, since he is God and I am not, it behooves me to understand what makes him happy. He's God, I am not. I need to know what God likes and what God does not like. I need to know what pleases him. So here's the important question. What makes God happy? How can I please him? Look at Hebrews 11:6. And it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. So what is it that makes God happy? It's faith. Faith is important because without faith, we cannot please God. Faith then leads to obedience. We sincerely seek him because we have faith, and that faith leads to longing to develop a relationship with him. So these are our two key points for today. God loves faith, and faith leads to obedience. Now, we have a long section where we will run through Old Testament history. So let's get your boots on. We're going fast here. Remember that Hebrews was written to a group of people who knew the Jewish Old Testament. They were schooled in the Old Testament. They knew a lot of things about the scriptures. So for them, this was a review. For some of us, it may not be, and please forgive me, we're going to go through this fast. There are lots of passages that you can look up to find the background of these stories, and I would encourage you to do that. All right, so let's start with verse 4. It was by faith that Abel brought a more acceptable offering to God than Cain did. Abel's offering gave evidence that he was a righteous man, and God showed his approval of his gifts. Although Abel is long dead, he still speaks to us by his example of faith. Who were Cain and Abel? Anybody know who were Cain and Abel? They were the first two children of Adam and Eve. So the first two humans that we know of that were born. Cain was a farmer, and Abel was a shepherd. Genesis 4 tells us that both men brought an offering to God. Both men brought gifts to God. Cain brought some of his crops. Abel brought the best of the animals as an offering to God. God accepted Abel's offering, but he was not pleased by Cain's offering. Cain became very jealous and murdered his brother Abel. So it's interesting, this says, although Abel died thousands of years ago, his example of faith still speaks to us now. By the way, who was wrong in that story? Cain was the one who committed the murder. How did it end up for Abel? He was killed. Does faith always result in good things happening? The answer clearly is no. Now the next example that he gives, verse 5, it was by faith that Enoch was taken up to heaven without dying. He disappeared because God took him. For before he was taken up, he was known as a person who pleased God. And it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. This is such an interesting story. You know, when you go back and you look at Genesis chapter 5, it's a long list of men. And it says, so-and-so lived, had children, and then he died. And that's a repetitive refrain throughout Genesis chapter 5. Until you get to about two-thirds of the way down the chapter, and it says, Enoch lived, had children, and then he walked in fellowship with God, and God took him. So it's such an interesting thought and such a contrast to the way the other men are listed in Genesis chapter 5. So I was trying to picture that scene. Can you picture this? Here's Enoch and God out for a walk, out on a country road, and God turns to Enoch and says, "Let's go home." And Enoch says, "Sure." And they disappear. Enoch did not die. There are only two recorded people in the whole of human history who didn't die. Enoch is one of those two people. Did Enoch please God? The answer is a resounding yes. He certainly did. What is it that pleases God? It's faith, and then the relationship with God that comes from that faith. Next, chapter 7, verse 7. It was by faith that Noah built a large boat to save his family from the flood. He obeyed God, who warned him about things that had never happened before. By his faith, Noah condemned the rest of the world, and he received the righteousness that comes by faith. You probably remember the story of Noah. It's one of the most famous kids' stories. One of the things you may not realize is that God uses exactly the same phrase to describe Noah as he does Enoch. In Genesis chapter 6, we read that Noah walked in fellowship with God. So Noah walked in fellowship with God. Noah had the same kind of relationship with God that Enoch did. And yet, look at the difference between the two men. Enoch walked with God. God brought him home. Noah walked with God, and God said, "Noah, you have to build this boat. It's going to take you several hundred years to build this boat. When you build the boat, the people around you are going to laugh at you and call you funny names. Not only that, I'm going to destroy the whole world, and the only way you are going to survive is if you get your whole family in this boat." What a contrast in the way that God worked. And yet, those two men both had the same identical relationship with God. The lesson I take from that is my journey of faith will be very different than your journey of faith, even though we both have a relationship with God. So understand that because someone else is doing something different, it does not mean that they're not in close communion with God. Now, let's go to verse 8. It was by faith that Abraham obeyed when God called him to leave home and go to another land that God would give him as an inheritance. He went without knowing where he was going. And even when he reached the land God promised him, he lived there by faith, for he was like a foreigner living in tents. And so did Isaac and Jacob, who inherited the same promise. Abraham was confidently looking forward to a city with eternal foundations, a city designed and built by God. It was by faith that even Sarah was able to have a child, though she was barren and was too old. She believed that God would keep his promise, and so a whole nation came from this one man who was as good as dead, a nation with so many people that like the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore, there is no way to count them. So who was Abraham? We're going to spend a lot of time on Abraham in this chapter, but Abraham was the father of the nation of Israel. God used him as his way of bringing blessing to not only his own people, but also to the rest of the world, because it is through Abraham that Jesus was born, and thus the blessing to the rest of the world. Now, God called Abraham to move away from civilization. Abraham lived in a town called Haran, which was a beautiful metropolitan city in a very green and verdant land. And God told Abraham, "Abraham, I want you to move." "All right, where are we going, God?" "I'll show you." "How long am I going to be gone?" "The rest of your life." "Okay." So now I'm trying to picture Abraham comes home to tell Sarah, "Hey, Sarah, I had this conversation with God, and God told me, hey, Abe, I want you to pick up everything and move to where I'm going to show you." Abraham comes home to Sarah and he says, hey, babe, we're going to move. And she says, where are we going? He said, I don't know. She says, how far away? How long will it take to get there? I don't know. She says, what will the climate be like where we're going? What kind of clothes do we need to pack? I don't know. She says, where will we live? He said, in tents from now on. In tents. We're not going to have a house. She says, are you crazy? Who's going to take care of us? And Abraham's response, God told us to go. He will take care of us. And she says, okay, let's go. That's the example of faith of Abraham and Sarah. At age 75, Abraham and Sarah packed up all of their worldly goods. They headed toward the promised land. And Scripture tells us they never again lived in a house. They never again had a stone foundation kind of building. They lived the rest of their lives in tents. Yet he trusted God, and God kept his promises. So what are some conclusions that we get from the life of Abraham? Number one, faith is like a muscle. It gets stronger the more it is used. You don't get stronger when you do one push-up. You get stronger when you do lots and lots and lots of push-ups. That's the way faith is. It gets stronger the more you use it. Secondly, faith responds in obedience to the call of God. Thirdly, faith includes belief, but there's also action based on that belief. Fourth, faith awaits the timing of God. Now, here's a hard thing for us to learn. Faith awaits the timing of God, not my timing. It is as presumptuous to say now to God as it is to say no to God. Think about that for a minute. Faith resolutely holds on to God's promise. And faith is the God-centered conviction that a good and gracious God will not lead us astray and will keep his promises. Now, verse 13. All these people died still believing what God had promised them. They did not receive what was promised, but they saw it all from a distance and welcomed it. They agreed that they were foreigners and nomads here on earth. Obviously, people who say such things are looking forward to a country they can call their own. If they had longed for the country they came from, they could have gone back. But they were looking for a better place, a heavenly homeland. That is why God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. What do these heroes all have in common? They kept their eyes on the future hope, not on the problems of this life. We're directed to be pilgrims heading for the city of God, not tourists enjoying the sights of life here on earth. Faith enables us to face the fact of death. Faith doesn't exempt us from death. In fact, all of these heroes of the faith died other than Enoch. Faith sees the promise of heaven and seeks the values of heaven, and receives the approval of God. In fact, one of the authors that I read describes faith as a kind of homesickness for heaven, a place we've never seen and never been, and yet my heart longs to be there. That's part of what goes with faith. Now, one other interesting thing I want you to notice. Look in verse 16. That is why God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. It is an amazing thing that the God of the universe chooses to identify himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He chooses to identify himself with sinful, fallen human beings. Now, God's not saying, I'm the God over Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That clearly is true. Instead, he's saying something like this. Hey, do you know Abraham? I'm his God. Hey, do you know Isaac? I'm his God. that's just such a strange way of God thinking about himself. And yet that's the way he identifies himself. He's not ashamed to be called our God because his heart goes out in gracious love to men and women of faith. So next time you read that, think through, God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that really paints God in a different picture. Now, verse 17. It was by faith that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice when God was testing him. Abraham, who had received God's promises, was ready to sacrifice his only son, Isaac, even though God had told him, Isaac is the son through whom your descendants will be counted. Abraham reasoned that if Isaac died, God was able to bring him back to life again. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead. This story is really hard to understand. This story takes place back in Genesis. God told Abraham to go on a 3-day journey, and when he got to a place called Mount Moriah, he was supposed to sacrifice his son Isaac. Now remember, Isaac is the miracle child. Isaac is the one who was born when Abraham was almost 100 years old and Sarah was 90 years old. No offense, Betty, but I can't imagine you having a baby. Sarah was 90 years old when she had a baby. So Isaac was the miracle child, and yet God told Abraham to go sacrifice your son Isaac. That's a sobering thought. Abraham got to the mountain. Isaac willingly, by this time, Isaac was a young man. He was at least a late teenager. He willingly allowed his father to tie him up and lay him on the altar. Abraham had the knife and was ready to plunge it down into Isaac's chest. And the angel of God stopped him and said, Abraham, stop. You have proven to me that you trusted me. We know in Hebrews that Abraham expected God to bring Isaac back from the dead because that's how much Abraham trusted God. God, I don't understand this. I don't know why you're asking me to kill my son, but I will do this because I trust you. I trust that if I do this, you will bring him back from the dead. This is the only time God ever asked somebody to do this, except. This story really foreshadows God himself giving the sacrifice of his son Jesus to pay for the sins of the world. Abraham and Sarah had a miracle baby. Jesus was a miracle baby. God asked for a sacrifice. Abraham was willing to give the sacrifice. That foreshadows how God sacrificed his son for us. Now, verse 20. It was by faith that Isaac promised blessing for the future to his sons, Jacob and Esau. It was by faith that Jacob, when he was old and dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and bowed in worship as he leaned on his staff. It was by faith that Joseph, when he was about to die, said confidently that the people of Israel would leave Egypt. He even commanded them to take his bones with them when they left. Isaac was Abraham's son. He was the one who God had promised Abraham. He lived as a nomad. He lived in tents in the promised land. He never owned a home, lived in a tent his whole life. He received a promise from God that he would inherit the land. He passed that promise on to his sons, Jacob and Esau, but he never saw the promise fulfilled. Notice Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, none of them founded a city. None of them put down roots in the place that God had told them they would inherit. Jacob, Isaac's son, lived a very complex and interesting life. He was not known as a man of high moral character. Yet, in his old age, he worshiped God and passed on the blessing of God to his grandsons, the sons of Joseph. Jacob never saw the fulfillment of God's promise. So three men, all listed as heroes of the faith, who never once saw the promise that God had made to them fulfilled. Joseph, any of you have watched the Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, you know the story of Joseph. Joseph lived a life of high moral character, yet he suffered terrible injustice. He was sold into slavery by his brothers and imprisoned unjustly. God used Joseph to bring the people of Israel to Egypt, where they were sheltered from the famine and the other things that were going on around them. Now, Joseph became the prime minister of Egypt. If you look at Egyptian history, if you were famous in Egypt or if you had a high position in government, you got a monument. That's what the big pyramids are. There were all kinds of beautiful monuments to kings and high rulers in Egypt. Do you know what monument Joseph wanted? He told the people of Israel, "You keep my bones, and when God fulfills the promise and we as a people go back to Israel, you take my bones with you and bury them in Israel." Joseph's memorial was, "I want you to always be looking at my bones as a reminder that God is going to keep his promise." I find that fascinating. I think that's a cool memorial to a life that was well lived. God's promises do not always come when we can see them. Now, if you're able, this has been a long time, we're going to take a break. So if you're able, I'd like you to stand. And Pastor Jeff is not here today because he just had knee surgery. So if you can, I want you to turn around and wave at the camera and wave to Pastor Jeff and tell him that we love him. So seriously, stand up, turn around, wave to the cameras, let Pastor Jeff know that you're here and that we love him. All right, now take a seat. I was watching as you all sat down. I didn't see anybody do any measurements of your seat to make sure it would hold you when you sat back down again. Why did you sit? Because you had faith that your seat would hold you. Why did you sit? Because I told you to sit, but that was a reasonable thing based on the fact that you thought your seat would hold you. That's just a tiny little illustration of faith. Faith is based on past experience, and it's also based on reasonable expectations. That's what faith in God is like. Verse 6 again, "And it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists, and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him." Now, look at verse 23. "It was by faith that Moses' parents hid him for 3 months when he was born. They saw that God had given them an unusual child, and they were not afraid to disobey the king's command." All right, this is a fast Old Testament history. We went from Joseph to Moses. In that period of time is 400 years. What has happened is the people of Israel have gone from being a family of 70 to a nation of 2 million people. They're living in Egypt. A new king comes in power in Egypt, and he's afraid. Here's this huge people group of 2 million people, and what happens if they revolt? So the king of Egypt did several things to try and keep the people of Israel subjugated, if you would. First of all, he made them slaves and said, "You will do forced labor and you will do building projects." We think that many of the big buildings of the Egyptians came because of the Hebrew slaves. Unfortunately, that didn't solve the problem. So the next thing the king of Egypt did is he said to the midwives, "All right, every time there's a baby born, if the baby is a boy, kill him. But if the baby's a girl, let her live. The midwives thwarted that. The excuse they gave to Pharaoh was great. They said, oh, but these Hebrew women are so strong, they have the babies before we can get there, and so we're not able to get there to kill the babies. I love that. So Pharaoh said, all right, that's not working. So the third thing we're going to do is we're going to tell all of the Egyptians, anytime you find a Hebrew baby boy, throw him into the Nile and drown him. That was Pharaoh's attempt to control the people of Israel. At that time, right then, is when Moses was born. So we know the story. Moses' mom hid him in a little boat, if you would, in the Nile River, and Pharaoh's daughter found him. She knew he was a Hebrew child, but she adopted him anyway. And so Moses grew up in the court of Pharaoh. So what that meant for Moses is instead of going to slave labor, he grew up with the best schools, the best food, the best of everything. In fact, at that time, Egypt was the most prosperous nation in the world. And so Moses grew up as a child of the king in the richest country in the world. Reading on. It was by faith that Moses, when he grew up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to share the oppression of God's people instead of enjoying the fleeting pleasures of sin. He thought it was better to suffer for the sake of Christ than to own the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking ahead to his great reward. It was by faith that Moses left the land of Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He kept right on going because he kept his eyes on the one who was invisible. It was by faith that Moses commanded the people of Israel to keep the Passover and to sprinkle blood on the doorposts so that the angel of death would not kill their firstborn sons. When Moses is an adult, he makes his own choices. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to share the oppression of God's people. He thought it was better to suffer for the sake of Christ than to own the treasures of Egypt. He refused to be Egyptian, but instead chose to follow God. He chose to be identified as a slave. He thought it was better to suffer for the sake of Christ. What others saw as a treasure to be pursued, the treasures of Egypt, Moses saw as a distraction to be discarded. What others saw as an experience to be avoided, the disgrace of Christ, Moses saw as a treasure to be cherished. Faith sees everything in terms of its true value, because it sees things in the light of eternity. Moses spent 40 years in the best schools in the world. Then he spent 40 years in the hard school of the desert. Only then was he qualified to lead God's people out of Egypt. By the way, Moses was 80 years old when God called him to do the work he had called him to do. That is such a great reminder to me that God can use us even when we think we're too old and weak to be used. Now, look at verse 28. It was by faith that Moses commanded the people of Israel to keep the Passover and to sprinkle blood on the doorposts so that the angel of death would not kill their firstborn sons. Here's something that I want you to think about. The instructions were detailed. This is the instructions about Passover. The ritual was unprecedented and the demands were high. It required faith on the part of Moses to pass on such detailed instructions. It required faith on the part of the people to celebrate in advance an event that had not yet occurred. Think about this for a minute. God gave these instructions to start celebrating Passover before Passover happened. That would be like the founders of the U.S. celebrating their independence before the revolution. Everyone knows that's not the way it's done. You don't celebrate the victory before you've experienced the victory. But that's not what God directed. Moses and the Israelites were to celebrate the victory before they experienced it. That's faith. Now, verse 29, it was by faith that the people of Israel went right through the Red Sea as though they were on dry ground. But when the Egyptians tried to follow, they were all drowned. So we've all heard the story. We've seen the movie where Moses stands there and parts the waters of the Red Sea. The reality is this was a group of 2 million people who were slaves. Now they're trapped. They're trapped between the Egyptian army with their chariots and swords and armor, well-trained soldiers, and the impassable barrier of the Red Sea. They were terrified. They were going to die. But God, in his provision, split the waters of the Red Sea, and the people believed God and walked through on dry land. Now, again, I'm trying to picture what that would have been like, walking through on dry land with walls of water on either side. I can't even begin to imagine how frightening that would have been. When the Egyptians tried to follow them and come after them, the walls of water collapsed and the Egyptians all drowned. By the way, why did they drown? They were wearing heavy armor. They couldn't swim with heavy armor on. That's the way that works. It was by faith that the people of Israel marched around Jericho for 7 days and the walls came crashing down. So now, he just keeps skipping ahead. Now we're 40 years in the future. The people of Israel have wandered in the wilderness and now they are getting ready to go into the promised land. This is finally the people of Israel coming into the promised land. Before they come into the promised land, there's a huge barrier. There's a big walled city named Jericho. Jericho has big, thick walls, a standing army. It's a big obstacle in their way. God gives them the most unusual battle strategy. Instead of build siege works around the city and do all of the things that you normally do to conquer a city, God says, I want you to march around the city once a day for 6 days. They're going, what? Okay, we'll march around. And then on the seventh day, you're going to march around the city 7 times. And at the end of the last time, you're all going to shout. Okay, we'll do that. When they do that, the walls of Jericho fall to the ground. The entire walls all around the city collapse, fall to the ground. And the people of Israel move in and conquer the city. God brought a great victory. It was by faith, verse 31, it was by faith that Rahab the prostitute was not destroyed with the people in her city who refused to obey God, for she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Remember in the beginning, one of the questions we asked was, do you have to be a man to be in the hall of faith? The answer is no. Do you have to be moral and upright and God-fearing? Rahab was a prostitute. But what Rahab did was Rahab heard that the people of Israel were coming. She believed God. She trusted God. She put her life on the line because she trusted God. And when the walls of Jericho came tumbling down, her house stood. Because she trusted God. So Rahab the prostitute and her family were saved and even became part of the lineage of David and eventually the lineage of Christ. So when the question is, do you have to be a man? Do you have to be a priest? Do you have to be good? The answer is no. God can use any of us to accomplish his objectives. All right, look at verse 32. How much more do I need to say? It would take too long to recount the stories of the faith of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and all the prophets. By faith, these people overthrew kingdoms, ruled with justice, and received what God had promised them. They shut the mouths of lions, quenched the flames of fire, and escaped death by the edge of the sword. Their weakness was turned to strength. They became strong in battle and put whole armies to flight. Women received their loved ones back again from death. So we have this long list of characters. This is a whole group of stories that take place in the books of Judges, and then the first part of 1 and 2 Samuel. Gideon was called by God to save his people in a time when they were being oppressed. Gideon had 300 soldiers, and he defeated an army of hundreds of thousands. Barak was called by God to lead an army of Israel against a much larger army. In that case, the army had 900 chariots. Chariots are like tanks today. So picture light foot soldiers against 900 chariots, and Barak and Deborah won the victory by God's hand. Samson was given great gifts by God, but he squandered them with a life of immorality, and yet he's still called a hero of the faith. Jephthah was an illegitimate son of a prostitute who formed his own outlaw gang. God used that outlaw gang to defeat an enemy army that was oppressing the people of Israel. David, the famous story of David and Goliath, David trusted God when the entire army of Israel did not. Samuel trusted God and rallied the people to win stunning victories over the Philistines. Then this list goes on to give all kinds of other great miracles that God has done in the lives of his people. Now comes the hard part. Look at the second part of verse 35. But others were tortured, refusing to turn from God in order to be set free. They placed their hope in a better life just after the resurrection. Some were jeered at, and their backs were cut open with whips. Others were chained in prisons. Some died by stoning, some were sawed in half, and others were killed with a sword. Some went about wearing skins of sheep and goats, destitute and oppressed and mistreated. They were all too good for this world, wandering over deserts and mountains, hiding in caves and holes in the ground. It's one thing to read about all of the miraculous things that God did to save his people. This is the section where God didn't do miracles to save his people. It's really tempting to say, if these people had only trusted God more, if these people had only had more faith, the outcome would have been different. That's tempting, but it's wrong. That's not true. The truth is that the life of faith may mean hardship. It may mean pain. It may mean all kinds of bad things happening. Ultimately, we all die. Faith does not guarantee comfort. Faith does not guarantee security. Faith does not guarantee prosperity. Faith does not guarantee escape from adversity. Faith does not guarantee survival. What faith does guarantee is sufficient grace. Verse 39, all these people earned a good reputation because of their faith, yet none of them received what God had promised. For God had something better in mind for us so that they would not reach perfection without us. People of faith await God's reward. Abraham had to wait. Moses had to wait. Did you catch verse 39? None of them received all that God had promised. None of them. That includes us. None of us have received all that God has promised at this point. But what faith says is that I can hold God to his promise. God will do what God has promised that he's going to do. People of faith have to wait for God's reward. We, all of us, have to wait. Look again at verse 6. And it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. I hope this verse is really familiar to you by now. We've looked at it multiple times. So, what is it that pleases God? Faith. What does faith lead to? Obedience. Let me say it again. What pleases God?
Faith.
What makes God happy? Faith. What does faith lead to? Obedience. Does faith guarantee a good outcome? Yes, but not in this life. Faith does guarantee a good outcome, but you may not ever see it while you are on this earth. Cling to that. Hold on to that. When things are bad, hang on to that. Remember, faith does not guarantee that you won't go through bad times. It does guarantee that God will keep his promises, if not now, in the life to come. Let's close our time in prayer. Your word is so powerful, O God. Thank you. Thank you for the things that you have taught us, the reminders that you've given us. Thank you that we can open your word together and hear your truth. Would you change us as a result of our study? Holy Spirit, would you lead and direct and make us more like Jesus?